chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are grass may dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off and play a clip, about a 29-minute clip, of one of the panel discussions, the first 29 minutes of the panel discussion that was held in Dubai. And Becky Anderson, the CNN, you could say moderator, that's been stationed in that area for a number of years, is the moderator. And so what this is, what they are doing, this is part of the World Government Summit 2022. And they're putting forward a lot of experts about how to handle these world problems, but it's all being pushed towards world government. And there's one lady in there that testifies that, yeah, we're going to an electronic currency, you know, and that will keep track of all transactions, so we'll know what everyone is doing. Very, 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 very dangerous talk. And then we're going to follow that by a few small comments, short comments by Alex and what he thinks about this. And also, he makes comments about Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab is behind all of this. So here we go with a real 29-minute excerpt from the opening panel discussion about the New World Order.
Highnesses, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, a very, very good morning on what is the first official day of World Government Summit here at Dubai Expo 2020. And the title of this session, Are We Ready for a New World Order? Well, the organizers here are nothing if not ambitious. This is, I think you will agree, a daunting subject for discussion at just after 9 a.m. on a Wednesday morning here in the relative calm of Expo 2020. But tackle it we must, because I believe what is clear is that we have hit an inflection point. We are certainly living in a unique age of uncertainty and volatility in global affairs, whether you are from the global north or the global south. We have all collectively lived through the twilight zone that was the pandemic and the changes to our social, our digital, and our fiscal landscape that COVID-19 wrought. And just as the world re-emerges from the pandemic, we are faced with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which certainly feels like a transformative geopolitical moment. Coming as that does, against a backdrop of great power struggles, the emergence of middle powers, of climate crisis and cybersecurity challenges, the trend lines certainly seem to indicate a world headed in a disorderly direction. Is the US-led multilateral system created post-World War II to manage international relations so that the world would never again see and experience the same chaos and disorder of a world war? Is it anything like fit for purpose? And if not, what is the alternative? That is the purpose of this discussion today, so let's get on with it. His Excellency Anwar bin Mohammed Gargash is the diplomatic advisor to His Highness Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed Al Nahyan. Fred Kemp is the President and CEO of the Atlantic Council. Dr. George Friedman is founder and chairman of Geopolitics Futures, and Dr. Pippa Malmgren is economist and former US presidential advisor. You are well served with my esteemed panel this morning. Will you welcome them, please, to the stage? Your Excellency, are you ready for a new world order?
I think, Becky, the main problem is if you think of the technology is 21st century, 22nd century technology. What is happening in AI, what is happening everywhere really that will really transform and is transforming our lives and also transforming international relations. But I think the frame of thinking is still 19th century. I think this is one of the problems that we have in the international system. Where if you look, we are still, it's still about nationalism, it's still about state sovereignty, it's still about use of force or non-use of force. And I think this is one of the major, major issues as we try to bridge really what is mentally, governing international relations with the 19th century mode of thinking, but at the same time with technology fast ahead of us in the curve. That, I think, will be a major problem.
That's a very interesting perspective. Fred Kemp, your assessment.
So my mentor on issues of world order is Henry Kissinger, so I'll try to channel him, and forgive me, Dr. Kissinger. But his answer would be, what do you mean no new world order? We have not had a world order yet. What we've had is we've had a Western order that was imposed on the world. And so the first world order in modern times, or somewhat modern times, was 4 centuries ago with the Treaty of Westphalia, ending a century of conflict, the 30 Years' War. And it wasn't a great moral thrust. It was just recognizing the world as it was. If you look at what we're trying to create right now, we're, I would say, at an inflection point in history as important as the end of World War I, where we got the effort at world order tragically wrong. We ended up with millions of dead, the Holocaust, in World War II. After World War II, we got more right than wrong with the creation of the International Liberal Order and the United Nations and the Bretton Woods system and the European Coal and Steel Community, NATO, etc. And then Soviet Union fell. And then the Cold War, we thought it was the end of history, and we thought that everyone could fit into the system that had been created, and it worked for a while, but not everybody came into it. But China grew. China certainly took full advantage of being part of the global system. Russia did not. Russia became more of an outlier. And I think where we are now, and this gets to your question, Becky, of a new world order, is it can go in two directions with the war in Ukraine now being a decisive element. Either the jungle is back, as the historian Bob Kagan talks, and that we can go into a darker era, or we could go into an era because of the advances of science, advances of technology, that could be one of the most prosperous, promising, progressive, enlightened, moderate, modern eras that we've ever faced. And I think we're in a moment where that's being decided, and I think the importance of the Ukraine issue is that it's a fulcrum for this, and how the world manages this issue and comes out of this is going to have far-reaching consequences that go beyond Ukraine.
Thank you. Pippa, the U.S. president, and I steal a line from the Washington Post here, their national columnist, who is a terrific writer. The U.S. president has framed the tension of this moment as pitting democracy versus autocracy. That is a controversial position, coming as it does. from the US president. Do you agree? And how does that framing fit into our wider discussion today?
Well, I think the word framing is correct. I wrote a piece in late October saying we're already in World War III. We are already in conflict that extends so far beyond Ukraine, actually, even within the context of Western Europe. But we've clearly been pretty much at war in space, below the surface of the oceans, submarine warfare between superpowers. I wouldn't even say that this has been happening for at least 4 years, and it's spilled over into public view on the ground. But we don't frame it that way. Also, this idea that it's one kind of political organization system versus another, but really it looks to me like old-fashioned superpower conflicts. Where I'm very optimistic, and I agree with you about how to frame the future, what I see as someone involved in technology, someone involved with entrepreneurs and advising governments, I see a future where we genuinely have ubiquity and not scarcity. I see a future where the internet is available for free for everyone in the most remote locations on the planet, for example. And that means the location of power is going to shift. And I see, as a person in financial markets, decentralization of power structures everywhere, in finance, in political power. And in fact, this conflict that we're in right now may be the beginning of that shift. I certainly see many people from the industrialized world looking very actively to move to places that they used to consider emerging markets, to build businesses there, to expand there. So I also think, to finish, this idea that autocracies have an advantage over democracies, I will fight that tooth and nail. I don't think it is correct, and I think our view that just because, for example, China had a more autocratic approach made them more successful is unproven by time. And we are going to find the places that allow the entrepreneurial spirit to thrive the most and give the greatest political latitude are the ones that are going to grow the best.
Thank you, Pippa. George, your assessment, briefly.
I think human beings live their lives in a storm, and nations live their lives in a storm. And we are gifted with nostalgia. We remember times that never were and long for them. So we are now in a normal condition of humans. We love those we love. We hate those we hate. We fight. We make up. And human beings are this thing. But it is the most interesting thing that we remember things that we never were. We remember a time where this tension of love and hate didn't exist. We remember a time that if we could only get back to, all would be well. And sometimes we imagine that if I have the internet, that will take me home. But there is no going home. We are at home. And we have to be at peace with where we are. And there is no time that has ever been at peace with the chaos that it was surrounded by. And that's the tragedy of the human condition. And it's greatness.
Right. Thank you. Your positions are quite clear. Dr. Anwar Gargash, then, let's just start with you. If we are looking at a new world order that is, as Pippa describes it, decentralized, if we are looking at a new world that is not a single power based, as it were, and a world that is layered by these what feel like very new global issues of climate change, of cybersecurity, as you suggest, of technology and the speed of that, what does that mean for this region? Because the perspective that we discuss world order through, as Fred has rightly pointed out, has been a Western perspective. My sense is that we must stop doing that. So what is the impact on this region?
I think to start with, Becky, the region has to catch up. I mean, the region is really behind various other regions in the world. And I think it's by prioritizing its own politics and prioritizing its own polarizing wars and confrontations. The region really, I think, number one, as the world is becoming multipolar, and I believe it is, and I agree also with the idea that this multipolarity is moving from economic to from political to economic to what I would call even currency multipolarity as we move forward. I think the region is really going through two phases. Number one is witnessing the sort of upper structure changing, but it has to catch up. And it has to catch up by emphasizing, in my opinion, non-political issues. Some of them are global issues, the ones you mentioned, and certainly COVID is a clear test of what we should be concentrating on: food security and cyber capability and climate change and others. But more fundamentally, I think the region lags behind in terms of multi projects of integration, economic integration, etc. I mean, if you just look at the GCC, for example, the GCC has never really been a big success when it comes to political direction. It has had varied views there. But it's been a huge success, really, in creating what I would call a common market. So I think the region needs to catch up before it actually becomes a major player. Otherwise, it will be very much subservient to this multipolarity that we're talking about.
And I want to come back to you for a sense from you, which I think would be extremely useful for this audience, as to what is going on behind the scenes here. When I say behind the scenes, it's very visible that there is enormous change in this region. Witness the meeting in the Negev Desert, the summit attended by the foreign minister here, His Highness Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed, four Arab foreign ministers meeting in the Negev Desert with the Israelis. I mean, if you told me that that was going to happen 3 years ago, 2 years ago, even a couple of weeks ago, I think I'd have still been surprised by that. So I do want to get, because I think that's very important, we get your perspective as to what is going on behind the scenes. But thank you, Fred. This sense that you, and you certainly see this here, that we are in a pivot with foreign policy to a policy that fundamentally and clearly serves economic needs. Geopolitics to geoeconomics, as Dr. Amwar has suggested, I think is certainly an extremely important driver of what is going on today. But your sense, I want to get a sense of where we're at and the impact that this will have on global policy going forward and how this world is run.
The impact of the economics of it all. Well, first of all, let's take a look at what makes up world orders. World orders are that a group of countries across the world agree to a set of rules, and they agree to play by them. The second is there's a balance of power so that no power feels that it can subjugate a neighbor. That's what we've lost in Russia. There wasn't a balance of power. Europe decided the age of military power is over, and so Russia is attempting to subjugate Ukraine. But then the third part of this is a consensus that everyone accepts this. It's almost too utopian to come about. And so what's emerging right now, which I think is a danger, is a Chinese-centered order and a U.S.-centered order, and that we're breaking down again. And that's not a healthy outcome. It's not the outcome we want. But that gets to the economics, and that's what I wanted to touch on, because the economics are that China, I think in 2016-17, invested $53 billion in the United States. Last year, $1 billion. So there's already a decoupling. There's already a breaking down. And the question is, how does this play out right now? And so I think you're going to see, in an economic sense, you're going to see these two worlds, but it's not going to be that neat. I think you're going to see the evolution of regional organizations, and the regional, because it's so hard to create a world order, I think you're going to see regional orders spring up. And then you have links between regional orders, but they will be very much guided by economic interests, social interests, and also security interests. You see things like the Quad, like the Abraham Accords, so ad hoc, not inflexible alliances, and that seems to me what's emerging at the moment.
Should countries' governments be forced to make a choice, to take a side at this point, Pippa? I mean, certainly, again, this is a big narrative here. You know, this is two, you know, this is a struggle by two great powers. I use the term great loosely to a certain extent, but, you know, two great powers. And others being forced to take a choice. I think this speaks to this kind of emergence of these regional powers and the emergence of the middle powers here, because we're hearing, quite frankly, don't force us into a corner here. Are they right?
Well, it may be a bit late for that. I remember talking to an Australian diplomat at one point about this break between the U.S. and China and said, you know, both sides are going to say, whose team are you on? Mm. And he said, our job is to make sure the question never arises. But the question has arisen. And so I think we have to go deeper. And it's not about the U.S. versus China. It's about what underpins a world order is always the financial system. Mm. I was very privileged. My father was an advisor to Nixon when they came off the gold standard in 71. And so I was brought up with a kind of inside view of how very important the financial structure is to absolutely everything else. And what we're seeing in the world today, I think, is we are on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, we're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. And the new one, the new accounting, is what we call blockchain. It means digital. It means having a almost perfect record of every single transaction that happens in the economy, which will give us far greater clarity over what's going on. It also raises huge dangers in terms of the balance of power between states and citizens. In my opinion, we're going to need a digital constitution of human rights if we're going to have digital money. But also, this new money will be sovereign in nature. Most people think that digital money is crypto and private. But what I see are superpowers introducing digital currency. The Chinese were the first. The U.S. is on the brink, I think, of moving in the same direction. The Europeans have committed to that as well. And the question is, will that new system of digital money and digital accounting accommodate the competing needs of the citizens of all these locations so that every human being has a chance to have a better life? Because that's the only measure of whether a world order really serves.
George, what do you believe the biggest shift will be?
Well, there's always a major shift in great powers. The world in 1945 was defined in a certain way. In 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed. Mm. Masaryk was written, the Japanese economic miracle turned out to be a miracle, and then so on. So in 1991, we had a change. We are now having another change. The first, we are discovering that Russia is not a great power. Economically, it lags behind South Korea. Militarily, it has shown itself not to be significant. It is a military. It is a nuclear power. We've also seen that in China, although it has had a magnificent run for 40 years, has now entered a period of economic dysfunction. Its economy, its financial system and such has to be restructured. These restructurings aren't easy, and they are never come without political problems. So it's a great power, but how it plays out the game is another question. But one thing we've discovered, I think, in this crisis, the enormous power of the United States, which has been forgotten. But the way the Americans were able to use the dollar as a weapon to put the Russians on defensive, the manner in which the United States was able to rally NATO to this common cause. I mean, when we look at the way we thought of the world a while ago, it's different now.
No, and that and you're making a very good point. I guess that begs the question, how long does that last?
Oh, not very long.
No, well, I mean, look, also begs the question, so go on.
When 1945 went to 1999, 1999 went to this point, if this is a transitory point, and every 20, 30, 40 years, we have a transition in the world. And that should not be unexpected. We are a dynamic people, and we will change the way we live, and the system will change, and we will have to align ourselves with it.
you made a point about, you know, the U.S., and I'm not sure if you actually use the term, forgive me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but has weaponized the dollar to a certain extent, or has used the dollar. You've seen the power of the dollar at a time when, as Pippa rightly points out, should we be looking at, you know, the sort of the fiat that we have used over the past X amount of years, is anything like useful going forward, or is that redundant? And if it is, as yet, still not redundant, is it the dollar or is it the Chinese currency? And we have seen the efforts or the noises made by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia recently just to suggest that it doesn't have to be the U.S. currency. That is the currency of repute going forward. You're all making some absolutely fascinating points. I think, you know, with 15 minutes left of what is a ridiculously short panel as far as I'm concerned, I think it's important to get a sense from you all as to how you believe governments will navigate the new global dynamics to shape a better future, which brings me very neatly to, if you will, Dr. Anwar, just explain, if you can, you know, what is going on in this region at present?
Well, I think, first of all, we've gone through a very difficult and torturing decade. Mm. And I think from the UAE's perspective, we need to turn the page and start a new page. And that new page is basically reaching out to various friends, of course, but adversaries also, and to make sure that, you know, we rebuild these bridges. We're not going to agree with everything they want to do, etc. And the Middle East really, going back to the Najaf summit, the Middle East is not really only about Iran, and the Middle East is not only about Israel.
Because you could be confused by that.
Yeah, you could be confused. Sure. You could be confused, and I think our whole intention is to find a way of functionally working with Iran. Mm-hmm. Our whole intention is to make sure that there is an agenda of stability and prosperity in the region that includes Iran and others. But I think the other also important element that you should not, be blindsided by, energy is coming back as a major component of many of the Middle Eastern and indeed world discussion. What people thought was the depth of carbon fossil energy, fuels. Of fossil fuels, etc., is, I think, a little bit premature. And I think you're seeing that also coming out in many of these discussions. I want to come back to the whole issue of this issue between democracy and authoritarianism. I think that this sort of binary is, from our perspective, is not the one we see. I think there are so many shades in between, and I think, for example, in COVID, it was really government efficacy that really identified who did well and who didn't do well. But I believe that you do ultimately need, perhaps in the middle between these two, you need something called governance. I think if every democratic attempt in the Arab world has turned ideological or tribal, so I'm not sure that this is really something that we can actually, work out very successfully here. But we do need governance. And governance, of course, includes a lot of components that are there. And I think this is perhaps the middle between the two binaries that you mentioned.
Fred.
Yeah, and Becky, I think I can pick up on Dr. Gargash because I agree with him completely that it's a false narrative. The issue is government effectiveness and whether the people consider the government to be legitimate. Democracy is one way to achieve that. There are other ways to achieve it. And the legitimacy is gained by governments that can deliver the goods, effectiveness to their people, can deliver freedom, which people want, so ensure human rights, ensure freedom, but at the same time ensure order, ensure safety, ensure health care. And I think this new era of technological change going faster all the time, whether it's quantum computing or artificial intelligence or bioengineering, these technologies are morally neutral. And so the technologies can be used to enlighten. They can be used to deliver government services better. They can be used to repress. They can be used to surveil in a way that would be unhealthy. And so I think, to me, that's really important. I'm going to say just one other brief thing on sanctions, because I wanted to say this. The dollar, everyone's been predicting the demise of the dollar for a long time. Mm. And I think it has a long tail. But if you overuse sanctions, more and more people will try to find a way around them. But Putin, since 2014, moved as far away as he could from the dollar in the U.S., and still the G7 froze for the first time in history the assets of a central bank, a G20 central bank. It wasn't because the U.S. did it. It's because the G7 did it. Mm. Without the U.S. and Europe together. And so I think it's really going to be a coalition of factors that will sort of decide whether or not one punishes. But I do think the dollar will last for a while yet. But it's not going to be America alone. It's not going to be America first. It's got to be America with others, and that's the only way, with our relative size and weight and GDP reducing, that the United States will indeed have influence in the world if the country just becomes much cleverer in building coalitions and working together with partnerships.
Yeah.
This is what Alex had to say, and I think he featured that lady in there that was talking about Dr. Pippa Mongren, and she said, we're going to have electronic currencies, you know what I mean? And we're going to be able to keep track of everybody. But here's what Alex had to say about it.
We do not yet know the full extent and the systemic and structural changes which will happen. However, we do know that global energy systems, food systems, and supply chains will be deeply affected.
We're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. And the new accounting is what we call blockchain. It means digital. It means having a almost perfect record of every single transaction that happens in the economy, which will give us far greater clarity over what's going on. It also raises huge dangers in terms of the balance of power between states and citizens. In my opinion, we're going to need a digital constitution of human rights if we're going to have digital money.
And the title of this session, Are We Ready for a New World Order?
That is gaslighting, where they do all this, they set it all up, we know what's coming next, we warn you, we show you where they're saying it in white papers, how they plan to go operational a certain date, we warn you for decades, it goes operational, and they're still simultaneously demonizing and attacking and censoring anybody that exposes it, because that's the agenda.
This gang, you could say, the World Economic Forum, along with the Bilderberg and all those other groups have devised a means by which to control us. Like they're putting us out to pasture, you know, like you do cattle. See what I mean? What they call free ranging cattle, where you put them out in a back 40 and then you give them some grass to eat. And then whenever you need food to eat, you slaughter them. And that's what's happening in this world with us. We've been put out on the back 40 and given something to eat and some propaganda. And then when they get ready for us, they'll do away with us. You know, we'll be of no more use to anybody. And so that's what this thing is all about. It's highly sophisticated and highly organized, and our school systems only indoctrinate us into being cattle. Or, you know what I mean, products, you could say. Well, coming next is Dr. Zelenko, and he gives us three reasons why how that vaccine, and three reasons why they did the vaccine, and the effects of what's going to happen from the vaccine. But here we go with Zelenko.
If we want to stop this epidemic, we need not just to monitor people, we need to monitor what's happening under their skin. What do we need so many humans for?
And so what does this guy say? Well, he says that humans are hackable animals, and since we can hack into your genetic code, who could re-engineer it with intelligent design, but not with some god above the clouds intelligent design, but rather by human intelligent design, because we are now like gods. There's no such thing as a soul. There's no such thing as free will. These are just some of the tidbits of what this guy...
This is literally Genesis out of the one of the oldest Jewish books telling us the serpent said it, and now he's saying it right now.
Well, he is the serpent. He's the embodiment of the serpent. And it's very actually relieving to me that the enemy has finally exposed himself. Because he's just one little man, but he represents an ideology that we have allowed to exist through the godless vacuum that we have created in the world, in society. He's the inevitable outcome of a society that has allowed for the desecration of the sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage, and the sanctity of gender.
You're saying we conjured him by our sin.
We allow for darkness to exist if we do not bring light into the world.
Powerful. Stay there. I want to get into this because I watch his whole speeches, and they're so satanic it makes your head spin. And there's Klaus Schwab drooling while he speaks. And so they definitely worship this guy. And we're going to talk about what he believes on the other side with Dr. Zelenko. This is so important. You can find Dr. Zelenko's site on screen. When we come back, we'll tell you about that as well. This is an incredible time. Everything is coming to a head, ladies and gentlemen. This is the battle of the gods, whatever you want to call it. It's happening. Well, there have been a lot of champions, a lot of great men and women in the last 25, 26 months that have really exposed the evil that was this giant depopulation operation that we're still in the middle of, but that because so many people got woken to what was happening, they kind of partially pulled back their attack, their offensive. But out of all of them, Dr. Zelenko has been the most informative and the most accurate. Dr. Vladimir Zev Zelenko is here with us. He's a medical doctor, of course, that pioneered treatments that saved tens of thousands of lives in New York, his patients that then helped trigger really a therapeutic revolution of research that the entire power structure tried to block. And I wanted him to come on today and just talk about how he was right, so he can then tell us about what he thinks is coming in the future. And he said, yeah, let's not get into me being right. Everybody knows what we've witnessed here. Let's move on to the big picture of transhumanism and some of the World Economic Forum people that are promoting statements like, why do we need so many people? We're about to become gods. Let's get rid of everyone. I mean, really evil, sinister stuff that you'd imagine you'd see in like a Marvel comic supervillain, but it's actually coming out of the globalist operation. So I'm glad he wants to get to that because I want his take on it. That was actually on my list of topics. So, sir, great to have you with us, Dr. Zelenko. Please try to cut to the heart of it, as you said you wanted to during the break when we talked.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me. So the enemy is godless, doesn't believe in an afterlife, but they don't want to die. And if you ask them what happens to consciousness after you die, they say it just ceases to be. And so what they're trying to do for the last 30 years is to create a way to escape death. I know it sounds weird, but that's exactly what they're trying to do. I don't think they'll succeed, but we need to understand the motivations of the enemy so that we can have a rational and good strategic response. And so if you listen to people like Ray Kurzweil and someone else whose name is Yuval Noah Harari, which we'll talk about more in a minute. What they're trying to do is create an inorganic, organic platform, humanoid platform, that has artificial intelligence where human consciousness could literally be downloaded into, and so that the self-proclaimed elites will then have a platform for eternal life. And because they have a problem, that the physical body that we live in only has a limited lifespan, 50 years, 100 years, whatever it is, it's finite. And so they, when this body begins to fail, they want to be able to transfer their consciousness into a humanoid platform, and then eventually over time into other humanoid platforms, upgrade, so to speak. Now, this is exactly what their agenda is, because they know that, or they believe at least, that if they were to die, that they would cease to be. Now, in that worldview, they are prepared to waste 6.5 billion people because it's completely unnecessary, useless eaters, and they don't need that many slaves. And so what this vaccine platform has been, these vaccines do a lot of things except one thing, prevent COVID-19. There are three simultaneous agenda capabilities that these vaccines do. One is population control, and that's done through four different phenomena. One is a percentage of people die relatively soon after getting injected. Long-term lifespans are being reduced because of chronic diseases such as cancer and autoimmune diseases. There's miscarriage rates that are skyrocketing from 10 to 82%, and actually recent DOD data, Department of Defense data, say over 300%. And then there's infertility. All this was predicted by the FDA in October 2020. This was not an accidental finding. This was a premeditated plan, proven by the fact that the FDA reported that this was going to happen to its scientists 2 months prior to the rollout. And now we have 15 months of data that corroborate this. Number two, there is a enslavement component here, a control mechanism, a 24/7 surveillance component about bringing the ability to measure biometric data under the skin and then transmit that data to a third party with your location, and then the linkage of that to cryptocurrency, which in 2026, according to congressional data, when Medicare begins to fail and the world economies become unstable, there will be a, you never let a good crisis go to waste. There'll be a transition from the current economic system to a one world cryptocurrency based financial system, which will then create the mechanism for control of human behavior, because if the powers that be that control the system don't like you, they just turn off your ability to buy bread for your family. And then the third most sinister component to this is the transhumanist component, or the ability to hack into your genetic code using an mRNA platform to deliver CRISPR-Cas9 technology and gene edit you so that you're no longer made in the image of God, but you're made in the image of Klaus Schwab or Bill Gates. They're literally going to re-engineer what it means to be human. And so this Yuval Noah Harari is... he's a wayward Jew from Israel, professor of history at Hebrew University, and he's called the prophet by people like Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates.
That's right. They call him basically their high priest, and he says stuff that, quite frankly, sounds like it came out of the mouth of Hitler, like, we don't need most people. We're about to become gods. This is dangerous.
And Obama called him his favorite author on CNN. And so what does this guy say? Well, he says that humans are hackable animals, that, and since we can hack into your genetic code, we could re-engineer it with intelligent design, but not with some god above the clouds intelligent design, but rather by human intelligent design, because we are now like gods. There's no such thing as a soul. There's no such thing as free will. These are just some of the tidbits of what this guy...
This is literally Genesis out of the one of the oldest Jewish books telling us the serpent said it, and now he's saying it right now.
Well, he is the serpent. He's the embodiment of the serpent. And it's very actually relieving to me that the enemy has finally exposed himself. Because he's just one little man, but he represents an ideology that we have allowed to exist through the godless vacuum that we have created in the world, in society. He is the inevitable outcome of a society that has allowed for the desecration of the sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage, and the sanctity of gender.
You're saying we conjured him by our sin.
Dr. Zelenko is right on top of everything. Next is Reiner Fulmick, and he's the man that's holding this grand jury. And trying to put forward all the evidence And here we go with Fulmick, and man, he's a stand-up person, so he's really a great person.
We do have to see the full picture. We have to see what's really going on, no matter how frightening it is, because if we don't, we're not gonna do the right thing. And it's right. This is basically a financial catastrophe that we're facing. Our currencies are probably going to be completely devalued very soon. The dollar has reached the end of the line. And it turns out that in maybe their own wrongdoing pushed them into an early start, because, you know, as I said earlier, we should have known that the financial industry is really a financial mafia when we saw what happened after the financial crisis of the Lehman, the housing crisis, which turned into a world economic crisis, because nothing happened, despite the fact that the politicians said, we're going to stop this once and for all. We're going to hold everyone responsible, everyone accountable who is accountable. Nothing happened except that they printed money. They looted and plundered our public coffers over decades, probably much longer than that, but we can see this precisely over decades. And then in September of 2019, when the central bankers met in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which they do once a year, BlackRock seems to have panicked, because we are in possession of a summary that they did for this meeting, and they basically said, not using these the very same words that I'm using, man, they're on to us. They know what's going on. We have to do something drastic in order to distract their attention. And that is why I think they had an early start.
I could ask 100 questions of this guy, but it's just best if I bring him on and talk about what he's done. He is a lawyer. He has put on these committee hearings that have been seen by tens of millions of people, dealing with the war crimes that have been committed. Dr. Reiner Fulmick joins us, and the best way to cover this is just to let him take over and tell us in the next 45 minutes what he's about to cover. Fulmick.com. FULLMICH.com, Crimes Against Humanity Tour.com. He is here. So thank you so much, sir, Dr. Reiner Fulmick, for joining us. Tell us in the next 4 or 5 minutes to break what you're about to lay out today, because the enemies of humanity are moving heaven and earth today to try to stop what you're about to say.
Well, thanks for having me back, Alex. I can only confirm what Dr. Zelenko, a really good man, just told you. These people are really trying to kill us. They are trying to reduce the population, the world's population. I think what they have in mind is reducing us by 80% or so. I don't think they're going to succeed. And we're doing something about this, and that's why we founded the Corona Investigative Committee. Its website is corona-committee.com. But on top of this, after we had gotten all these little pieces of the puzzle about how the PCR test doesn't do what people claim, or what Fauci and Drosten from Germany claim it does, how the vaccines are not necessary because we don't have a corona pandemic, rather we have a PCR test pandemic. Also, we have alternative methods of treatment. Dr. Zelenko invented the Zelenko protocol, which works perfectly well. Plus, they're neither effective nor are they safe. So we took all these pieces of the puzzle and decided with a group of international attorneys to let the people see the entire picture through a judicial proceeding, which is based on the American grand jury proceeding. This is a suggestion by our colleague Anna Garner. And we had this six-day hearing. We're going to conclude it soon with closing arguments. And then we're going to go into phase two. We're going to have an actual trial, and we're going to probably be able to enforce the judgment that will hopefully result from this trial. Why am I saying this? Well, I think it is taking too many chances to try to bring this case, file it in within the system. There are some places where the system still works, in particular in some places in the U.S., but also in India. But most of the places here in Europe, in particular in Germany, are totally corrupted and infiltrated. So there's no use in getting one of these systems court to hear these cases. We're not going to get a fair hearing. So we're going to do this outside of the system, but we still believe, because it's a real trial with real attorneys, a real judge, and a real jury, which will be our viewers, we still believe we can enforce the resulting judgment, because it looks, if you look at Ukraine, which is just an extension of the fear-mongering that we've seen with the corona pandemic, if you look at Ukraine, they're using this in order to keep us in fear mode and panic mode in order to go through with their Great Reset, its real goal is to create a one world government, because they want to make us believe that our national governments, which they're not our governments anymore. Most of them have been infiltrated into our systems through the World Economic Forum, which has its own production capacity in terms of their Young Global Leaders program. So we do believe that things are going to come to a head probably in the fall. You can't make any precise predictions, but based on the testimony that we got from geopoliticians, based on what we think is really happening in Ukraine, it's very hard to tell because there's propaganda on both sides, but the one side that we're being presented is the one that is presented to us by the same people who've been lying to us about corona, the mainstream media.
That's right. Dr. Reiner Fulmick, stay right there. We're going to come back and lay this out. But it's just an incredible time to be alive. Huge awakenings happening. They're acting like they're pulling back in the cub of tyranny, but they're waiting in the wings. So it's so important to continue to hammer this truth. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. Well, you can pull up a State Department CIA document from the late 60s under different titles, but it's 198 ways to peacefully resist. Another headline gives you the same CIA plan. It's 198 ways for civil disobedience. Another one's 198 ways of nonviolent action. And one of the biggest ones, which they didn't invent this, they're just listing it, is a mock trial or a grand jury. With real scientists, real lawyers, real people, you put on the evidence as a blueprint for others to do it. In fact, I've seen political scientists point out that the mock trial or the mock grand jury is one of the most important. And I saw the enemy disinfo agents go crazy months ago when very famous, successful, respected attorney, Dr. Reiner Fulmick, came out and did this. They said, oh, he's claiming it's a real trial. Well, no, it's a real presentation of evidence to get a real investigation, so that you see that deception, because they're so scared of something real like this, where we put these people on trial every day too, showing you all this stuff. That's what this is. Everything in life is a trial. You go to a restaurant. Is the food good? You buy a suit. Does it fit well? Does it last? You buy a car. Everything's a trial in life. So he's really pioneered this. And what matters is he did a great job. They were very truthful, very accurate. And it got seen conservatively where I saw it 20, 30, 40 million times. So he's really with us till the end of the hour, and he's got so much to say about where we are. But if I had to pick two people been on the show in the last few years who just have a way of saying things, it's Dr. Zelenko and it's Reiner Fulmick. Just the way they describe things is just so dead on. And I'm not praising you, sir, to get accolade. I'm just saying I really respect your view on this and where we're going, because it seems you're dialed into the zeitgeist. So just wherever you want to go, please continue.
Well, thanks, Alex. That's heaping too much praise on me. We're a group of attorneys. We're about 30 attorneys from all over the world, including South Africa, the United States, Canada, France, Italy, many, many other countries, India. And it's only the fact that we're all connected and we're all in it for the cause. No one's in it for money, because we're not making any.
That's the power, is this college of people coming together.
Yes, yes. It's incredible. But the way that this connection seems to be working, it's almost like, I don't know, magic. Maybe you can call it that.
Synergy.
It gives each, Yeah, that's what it is. It creates synergies. There's so much. We really like each other. We get along with each other. We're all doing the same thing and have been doing this for a long time. And we don't care how many people, try to disparage us or, try to, even cause us serious problems. You may have heard that our French colleague, Virginie, was arrested last week.
Yes, I meant to bring that up. Tell people about that. There's video of this. Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, she was arrested early in the morning. Her two very young children unfortunately had to witness this. She was held in custody for, I think, 3 days. It didn't have anything to do with her participation in the grand jury investigation. Rather, they claimed that she was being held in custody and questioned because she was advising or representing a terrorist. Well, turns out the terrorist is just somebody who's asking questions, and that's why they framed him as a terrorist.
Wow.
In effect, we don't think that there wasn't any cause for this, but what this really meant to do is send a message to the other attorneys in France, because they can't intimidate her, a message of fear. If you're not in line with the government, then we're going to go after you. Something very similar happened in Germany about a year ago, when a judge in the city of Weimar simply applied the law. A mother of two underage children, 7 and 9 years old, came to him and asked for his help and said, "My children can't sleep. They have stomach aches. They are crying at night. They don't want to go to school anymore. They feel they're being tortured. This constant PCR testing, the mask mandate, social distancing. They want to play and they can't." So the judge said, "Well, I'm going to have to get some experts, expert witnesses to help me out on this." And he got in touch with three renowned professors from renowned universities, one PCR test expert, another one child psychologist, and another one, a third person who specializes in masks. Based on their evidence, on their expert opinions, they decided this is illegal, this is unconstitutional, and ordered the school to stop these practices. 3 weeks, so this is perfectly normal. 3 weeks later, his house, his office, his car were searched. His phone, his cell phone, and his computer were seized. Same thing happened to the three experts. Same thing happened to a friend of the judge, simply because she was a friend of his. Same thing happened to a colleague. Same thing happened to the lawyer who represented the children. So this is what you're seeing pretty much everywhere in Europe and apparently in some other places as well.
Thanks for listening to our program this Saturday evening. The click-offs will be up there on this site, thesecrettruth.com. I'll put up some of the full interviews where you can go in there and I'll embed those. And also I'll give you click-off to the World Government Summit that was held over there in the Middle East. And so you'll be able to see totally some of those panel discussions. But anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you out there in our listening audience. And we'll be doing some fresh programs in the near future. So we did do three programs, three video recordings down in front of the Alamo at the first week in March. But we'll put those up too. But thank you for listening, and good night. God bless you. Good night.